outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun. Our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Inside Outdoors.
Good morning, good morning.
Right here from downtown Bloomington, Indiana, and environs.
Right. Yeah. We're still doing this by Zoom. I'm Rich Reardon, and I'm glad you're here and back safe from, you had a little trip, and that was fun. A long way to go, though.
Yes, we went to Montana.
Nice.
And good for me. I'm not so sure my little woman was totally happy with the whole month.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, but you know, we didn't argue or hit each other. There was no knives drawn.
Not enough activity out there in the wilds.
Well, there was plenty of that. There was, when we first got there, it was motorcycles from Sturgis.
Right.
We're just off Highway 212 there, and for some reason, as soon as Sturgis is over, all the motorcycle guys and gals have to ride over the Beartooth Pass to prove they've got hair on their chest.
Right.
Which, isn't all that big a deal. And then as they come down the pass, off the pass, to go into the park, that's downhill, and they like to rev their motors and get the sound bouncing between the mountains down through the valley there.
That helps with the serenity of the area.
Yeah, and we're right on that downhill, you know, the last bam 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 before you get to Silver Gate.
Yeah.
And Yellowstone Park. And there's a lot of Yellowstone Park visitors. The town was overwhelmed. Cook City, they were ready to give up, quit for the season in July.
Yeah.
And from all estimates, it looks like, going to set new attendance records this year. Although I noticed after about halfway through August, maybe around the 20th,
mm-hmm.
The families with children began disappearing because I assumed they were going home to go to school.
Right.
And that cuts into a lot of the crowd.
Yeah.
And the number of foreign tourists went up, however. Large groups of foreign tourists being led by a guide, whatnot. Joe and I drove down to a few of the tourist sites that are most popular, and one of them is the Norris Geyser Basin, where there's 300 geysers or something. They're all, most of them are all little bitty things,
mm-hmm.
but they vent all the time. They make lots of noise. And there's lots of steam, and it looks like a bad place to camp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad place to camp. There's sulfur fumes and whatnot, and spray, and you got to watch that coating on your glasses, because you don't want to get any, it turns to acid once it hits them, you know.
Right.
So yeah, the buffalo were most amusing this year.
Well, I saw a picture you had of one.
Oh yes, dude, he was giving me the old evil eye there. when they're on the road, they pass right by you. I mean, you know, you just pass the mirror, you know, the side mirror on mm-hmm. your truck door. There's a buffalo face, you know, with a horn, a big horn, sharp horn. And, you know, they know you're there.
Yeah.
You can tell by the way that one's looking at me that he kind of wishes I wasn't there.
Yeah, you look kind of mean.
Yeah, well, they all the males look like that. And it was the seasonal mating was in its beginnings, and all of the bulls were herding as many young females across the road as they could,
mm-hmm.
and any that tried to escape got ran down and herded back into his harem.
Right,
and so there was lots of grunting and. They have a very guttural language.
Yeah.
And lots of babies this year. I don't think I've ever seen so many baby bison ever. And
do they have a real predator? I would think the babies would be the ones at risk. But
well, yeah, they do. They've got wolves. And grizzly bears.
Yeah.
Grizzly bears, you know, and even coyotes for young, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They do kind of herd the young together. They seem to kind of keep bunches of them together, and they'll post lookouts, or they have lookouts, or it's moms just looking out, you know.
Right.
And yeah, the wolf watchers were in great abundance this year.
Did you see a lot of them?
Oh, we didn't see a lot of wolves. We saw a lot of wolves.
A lot of watchers.
Yeah, down in the Lamar Valley, there were some of the crowd wolf watcher groups probably were 50, 60 people.
Wow.
You'd see them looking across the field, you know, in their glasses and their spotting scopes, and you know, one guy looking one guy, another one looking this way. Hardly ever were they all looking at the same spot, which told me they weren't seeing too many wolves.
Right.
They were searching.
Yeah.
But they are there, and people do see them now and then, but it's not every day. And it's in the Lamar Valley, which has great viewing. You know, if you're ever going to see them, that's where you would have a good chance. So that's still a popular feature at Yellowstone Park ever since 1992, when they reintroduced the wolves. Just been growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I saw there was a woman that got fined for doing something in the pool there. I'm not sure what she was doing, but in one of the, you know, you're not allowed to get into.
No.
Or do anything with those pools. You're supposed to just stay on the wood, you know, or the walkway. But
there's always somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've had a few people die and break through that crust and go down into the hot boiling water and
Man.
Get steamed like a lobster, you know?
Yeah.
What a way to go, huh?
People don't realize that it's true. They're hot.
Yeah. And it's also, although it looks firm, the ground out there could be, you know, eighth of an inch thick.
Yeah.
And below the boiling pit.
Right.
Yeah.
I've always stayed on the walkways. I don't trust anything except for that or the road.
Well, you know, the thing about the geyser, the features of the geyser basin and all the rest of the, what do they call them, thermoplastic features of the park.
Right.
Is they most of them stink.
Yeah.
You know, they got serious sulfur dioxide and other smells in the air that's probably bad for the camera on your lens, and at least the UV coating on your glasses.
Right.
And it's always hot, you know, and it had been pretty cold actually, I suppose after about the maybe the 20th or the middle of the month, when it had been real hot, it started raining, and mm-hmm. it rained a lot, and it got 30s every night, and it was nippy. Had some nippy weather there for a while, and that really cut down the crowd too. I think a lot of people went home because I noticed on our little trip, we passed the Mammoth Campground at Mammoth Hot Springs, which is a real big in the park campground.
Right.
And it was half empty, which was surprising. I've never seen half empty this time of year, that early in the year. But anyway, virus was spiking, probably as a result of the spreader event at Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, and they all came to Park County, as the county that Yellowstone's in.
Yeah, the rally never really suffered in the last couple of years through the pandemic. They just went there anyway.
No, and took it home with them.
Yep.
Took it home with them. Well, in any case, that's that's old news now. There was, earlier this year in Yellowstone, there was a woman killed by a grizzly.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't actually in Yellowstone. It was across the Beartooth Mountains over north of there. But still, it came in her tent and got her and ate her.
Wow.
And carried her away. They didn't find her for a week. And I saw just before I left, they had found her body. After they make a kill, they'll take it someplace and
kind of bury it, right?
Bury it, or half bury it, or cover it with leaves, or cover it with something.
Yeah.
And let it ripen up a little, and then they come back and munch on it every now and then. In any case, that's too bad. And of course, that spilled the death for this bear.
Yeah.
Bears just can't get away with that anymore. I'm sorry, bears.
And how many million people visit Yellowstone too,
Well, last year it was 22 million. They're bracing for 40 million. They're thinking maybe double. I heard see people saying triple, but that'd be 66 million. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But, if you look, judge by the business that was going on in the towns, we also went to Cody, always got to make a trip to Cody for mm-hmm. groceries and whatnot. And it was busier than normal also.
Yeah.
So that's in between the northeast entrance and the east entrance.
Right.
And a nice little town.
Well, I suppose those towns really depend on the traffic they get, huh?
Well, they do, except that Cody is the biggest town around that part of Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
So, it has a lot of things that a town its size wouldn't normally have.
Yeah.
It's got a nice hospital. It's got museums and culture, stuff like that. Cody, Wyoming. Who'd have thought it? And that's the Buffalo Bill Museum is there.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I thought the Buffalo Bill, it's kind of named after him, isn't it? That's that town, or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That was his town, actually.
Yeah.
He started it.
A lot of Western history there.
Yeah, Sitting Bull and all them engines that were in the Wild West show.
Right.
Or lived there at one time or another. And now there's a big firearms museum there also.
Mm-hmm.
And a Native American art museum that also that includes some of the Western artists, American Western artist work, like Remington, some statues and whatnot. And it's got a Walmart, and yeah, we got several fly fishing shops, and got one of the biggest boots shops around.
Yeah.
You want to buy yourself a pair of $895 Lucchese boots, you can get them there. And cute little cowgirls to wait on you. You know, rodeo girls. That's, you know, they have a rodeo in Cody every Saturday night.
Right.
So they have lots of rodeo boys and girls hanging around there, you know, in general.
Well, and speaking of the gum museum, one of my favorite shows is the
Antiques Roadshow.
Antiques Roadshow, and they had a 1851 Colt Navy revolver that somebody had brought in, and that's like one of the major guns that you think of when you see, you know, you see somebody with a gun stuffed in his belt or whatever, you know, in an old photograph of the West. That was a pretty big one, and that was worth a fair amount of money. It was in real good shape.
I would think that you'd have a hard time keeping your pants up with one
of those.
That's
a huge gun.
Yeah, they must weigh 5 to 10
right,
pounds.
But that was all you could get it for a while, you know.
Well, they were popular during the Civil War.
And once in a while, you'll see a Winchester or a Sharps rifle or something like that. You know, the Sharps were kind of the ones that the army used, right? The cavalry.
Well, after a while, yeah they did. That was the Buffalo rifle.
Yeah,
you know, a single shot breech loader, long distance, heavy powder loading.
Right. It was like
thing.
A one shot, right? You had to load it each time.
Yeah. Right. But it was easy, you know, it was cartridge loaded, so it wasn't ramrod.
Right.
And it's when that stuff all appeared after the Civil War for the most part, right?
Right.
And they did have a last night, or night before last, if you watched a road show, they had a 1770s model, actual rifle barrel, breech loading rifle, which was very unusual. You know, those were muzzle loaders and smooth bore rifles, most are guns used in the Civil War for the most part, in the Revolutionary War for the most part. And this was a real rare piece, you know, it brought a pretty good estimate. Of course, I think those guys on the road show always give you bigger estimate than they actually going to get.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I'm pretty big Civil War buff, having grown up fairly near Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I used to travel there a lot. I know a lot about the battle and everything. But you know, one of the amazing things about those weapons were that it really, you'd shoot and it would take you probably upwards of a minute or even two to get your next shot loaded. So the way that battles went, part of the reason that you had a commander there with you was literally for you to be held back from just randomly shooting constantly and waiting to decide where the problem was and then get everybody to aim at one spot, because you really wanted to have a barrage rather than just individual willy-nilly whatever you wanted to shoot at kind of thing, because it would take so long to reload. And that could tend to be also a little bit of a liability, because if everybody shoots at once, then nobody can do anything until everybody's reloaded again.
Well, that's the reason for rank.
Absolutely.
You know, first rank file, second rank load, third rank scratch your head.
Very interesting. They have some of those older even flintlock rifles come into that road show now and then, and I always kind of wonder why they're not more expensive. They tend to not be hugely expensive that I would think of. I guess there must be more of them out there than you would imagine, but
I don't know why anybody would want one. You
just
know,
to put on the wall, I guess.
I don't know. If you ever try to shoot one, you might kill yourself. I'm not a big flintlock.
No, even
fan.
When they were new.
No. Blunderbuss, that's it.
Yeah. Isn't that the pirate gun that had that kind of big old barrel that would just shoot stuff out, whatever you loaded in there?
Yeah, right. It had a big head of, looked like a RCA speaker from the old dad, you know. The old, what was his name? Sparky?
Yeah, the dog. The was dog, I think so. Sparky? Yeah.
Yes, for the good old days. Now you can't even, you know, even if you decided you wanted to buy yourself a rifle or a pistol or shotgun, you might be able to buy one somewhere, you know. You might find one on the shelf someplace for some outrageous price. But after that, you know, you're probably never going to be able to find ammunition for it. Although the rumor in Montana was that things were loosening up in Wyoming.
Really?
So if they're loosening up in Wyoming, that might be a good sign, because that's the home of all crazy people, you know. And that entire area is where a lot of those wing nuts come from. And a lot of that ammunition gets sold, by the way. So if things are loosening up in Wyoming, maybe a good sign that we'll be able to buy some 22 ammo. Something. You know, I'm still operating on bullets I bought 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I just don't shoot that much, you know. It's hard to, really hard to find a good legal place to shoot nowadays. Mm-hmm. And you can drive over to Atterbury. Oh, speaking of Atterbury, I guess you heard that they're going to have Afghanistani refugees are going there. Up to 6,000.
Well,
yeah, so that'll shake them up over there in Edinburgh. They'll be wondering what's going on. I'm afraid the Taliban are going to break out in downtown Edinburgh. Now the Edinburgh Diner. Oh my God. Can it happen?
Well, I don't think the Taliban really want to leave Afghanistan right now.
Well, I think things are going pretty much their way at this time. They're happy campers. They are happy campers. Well, let's see. This weather break that we got today. And, you know, just beautiful. From past experience, this kind of day is never a great fishing day, even though it's a great day to be outdoors. Mm-hmm. Now, after another day passes and things get a chance to calm down, the streams clear out, I'd say the fishing will be pretty good.
Well,
and it'll be,
the conditions are, right now we're looking at about 80 degrees on the lake and 538, basic, straight up, you know, Good level, normal level for this time of year. And then I guess we'll start. It is going down. I can see because I think the highest we saw was about 82, something like that. And now we're down to 80. So I think with this cool weather, we may see some better fishing towards the end of September.
Yeah, well, when that faster that comes, the better. Although, you know, September here is often hot as blazing.
Can be.
This is a little respite we're getting right now. I'm sure it'll warm back up. But, you know, it's a good, great time to fish the streams after this rain has flushed some stuff out, you know, and it'll be going back down. We don't have a lot of rain in our forecast for the next week. I'd say, if you can walk and know a place where you can get access and without breaking anybody's property rights.
Yeah.
Going down a stream would really be fun just right now.
Well, one thing I didn't really get to ask you about Montana was how was the fishing? Did you get to do any perusing?
Fishing was excellent, better than it's been. Well, I wasn't there the last year. I guess I wasn't mm-hmm. there, and I missed 2019 for some other reason. But I haven't been there since 2018. The fishing wasn't very good, but this year. We started out fishing on a river outside of the park, which we generally do, and it was pretty phenomenal, really. Would have been easy to catch 20 or 30 brook trout right. a day, you know, most of them not very big, but you know, we caught enough in that 11 inch range to have plenty of to eat if we had been keeping my buddy Mike, who you know, thinks that brook trout are the best to eat. I'm a little more partial to the cutthroat trout. I think they're pretty darn good, but I agree that brook trout are. Both are a little better than rainbow trout. I'm not sure why, but probably because the rainbow trout you get in a restaurant is all farm raised trout. The wild trout tastes a little different.
Oh yeah, especially in the high mountains.
Well, I fished the little creek right down in front of the cabin and caught the biggest fish I caught of the whole trip, a 17-inch cutthroat. Well, it was a cutbow. That's a hybrid rainbow and cutthroat trout, and they killed out the stream a few years back to get rid of all those rainbows, so there wouldn't be any more hybrid. They were going to make that a prime. Pristine cutthroat genetic stock, East Slope cutthroat. Well, it looks like that's already over because the rainbows found a way to stay in there during all the poisoning and shocking, or they found a way to come upstream through Icebox Canyon, which I could never understand why the biologists thought that would stop them from coming upstream, but that's what they reasoned. Well, anyway, there's fish in the Soda Butte again.
So,
and there was a lot of fish.
Do you think it was because there were less fishermen, and you know, with COVID and everything, that they kind of came back? Or I wonder what the reason is that fishing was so much better.
Well, you know, they restocked it with quite a few cutthroat West Slope genetic stock about 5 years ago, and they've had a chance to spawn,
right?
You know, and there's fairly good sized fish, you know, 17-inch fish, pretty good
Heck
fish,
yeah.
you know, at that altitude, and it was kind of a surprise. We used to catch nice fish down there all the time, but you'd catch a cutthroat and then you'd catch a brook trout.
Right.
You know? Now all you catch are these. There were some of them were pure cutthroats and some of them were cutbows. So, you know, I don't know what an improvement that is over the former fishery that was there. But the biologists, I guess, are happy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. If the fishermen are happy, I'm sure they are too.
Well, this fisherman wasn't too happy when they killed all the fish.
I mean that they're coming back anyway.
Yeah, well, I am glad that they're coming back. But the poisons that they used in the stream killed the insect life too. You know, so it's taken a lot of this time to build up the basic food stock for the fish that are in there.
Right.
And I guess that's happened now. So congratulations. Congratulations. Fishing here, well, you know, they put more wipers in. I guess you saw that, or we talked about that before.
A lot of them.
Earlier. Put a lot of new wipers in, which is always there's people that target those who go out there and just fish for wipers. And, they pull hard, you know, they're a gamer. They do hit hard and pull hard. They don't jump. If you want a jumper, you got the wrong fish, but boy, they go for the bottom, and you better have a strong enough rod or you'll never get them to the boat. And wipers, boy, a lot of people fish the tailwaters and off the dam. You know, I know it's illegal to hobble around on that riprap on the dam, but a lot of people do that. And a lot of people fish from legal places around there off the, at that end of the lake for wipers. And, you know, a good gizzard shad on a hook is probably as good a bait as you can get. But if you, you know, if you don't want to fart around with live bait, you can get yourself a shad wrap or any bait that's flashy and looks like a shad, wiggles like a bait fish, and you'll probably catch them. You know, they're not that hard to catch if they're in the area and they're on the feed. You'll catch one, and they do pull hard, so good luck on that. Other than that, crappies are the standard at Monroe. You can probably catch as many of those as you want of the smaller issue size off of any dock around the lake. And you know, don't forget those submerged fish structures that they put in at Lake Monroe just for we fishermen to attract fish and get them to hang out. And they're a lot of them are made out of pallets that are nailed together and make kind of a house out of it, or stacked in a certain way or one way or another. And then they sank them. And where they sank them is in between IU Point, which is what I always called it, and Grub Peninsula, which comes out, that big peninsula that comes out of Saddle Creek.
Right.
On the upper end of the reservoir. And they're kind of almost, you know, in a line across there. And they certainly show up on your depth finder. There's an interactive map available at the DNR's website that shows you exactly where these structures are and other lakes that have had structures sunk in them, like they did these. And that's one of the greatest improvements that you could make to a lake like Monroe, whose the bottom there was totally skinned when they built it.
Right.
That's what the Corps did in those days. So there is no structure on the bottom of Lake Monroe. It's just an open, flat mud plain down there. And you know, every once in a while, you might see a stump or two, you know, or a depression where an old road might be, things like that. But not much in the way of structure to go for. But look up those sunken fish structures, and you'll probably be happy.
Yeah. Well, and we did have, like you said, there was a, you know, striped bass and the wipers and all that stuff went in there. So I don't remember. There was we seemed to have gotten a pretty good share of it this year.
We had a big number.
Yeah.
Big number because, you know, we're far and away the biggest lake. And the stocking all those predators did seem to help the size of the fish at Monroe, the size of the bluegill and the crappie. Crappie, maybe, especially, because there never been anything but those wafer-thin crappies in Monroe that I ever caught.
The see-through ones you talk about.
That's right. You can see through them. And those are the ones you catch off the dock. But they're even catching some little bigger ones off the dock now, I guess. So, you know. Maybe they got to get enough predators in there that are big enough to eat those gizzard shad, which can be, you know, they can go to 2 or 3 pounds, big gizzard shad. Mm-hmm. So you got to have a pretty good sized predator to take care of that.
Right.
I'd say some flathead catfish, you know, blue catfish, hybrids, wipers, you know, that kind of fish. Walleye wouldn't hurt any either, of course. We don't get those anymore. They send those all up north primarily, and we get kind of sloppy seconds. You know?
Yeah, they didn't even mention them this year.
No, they did not mention them. That's because we're not in the plan anymore. That's too bad because there's quite a few guys that have enjoyed fishing for walleyes down there.
Oh, heck yeah.
And were successful at it. But, you know, being successful on walleye fishing, even in Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, if you're in a populated, any kind of a populated area or a popular lake, if you get two keepers a night, that's pretty darn good.
Heck yeah.
You know, that's really good. And there's not too much of this limiting out, you know, five fish, you know, you're not going to see that much, if at all.
Right.
But you might catch two 18 inchers, you know,
mm-hmm.
And if you're old enough and feeling lucky, you can eat it without too many health repercussions. If you don't eat more than those two
mm-hmm.
for a while.
Yeah.
Until your toes stop glowing. And then, you know, you could try it again. And let me emphasize that you don't probably eat those if you're a young person. And but if you're a guy 70 years old, you know, having your toes glow is something new. Yeah, well, in any case, Lake Monroe fishing fun. And wonder if our buddy Alan got anywhere with his campaign to stop the dumping of sewage from the houseboats in the cove next to his place down there.
I haven't heard anything that other than what he brought up last week. So,
well, you know, that's been an ongoing problem ever since any reservoir ever opened.
Yeah.
Or any lake ever opened. It's, by law, you're supposed to have that bypass valve sealed,
right,
and unable to open. But where there's a will, there's a way, you know.
Yep.
And I guess the only way around that would be to every year to have an inspection, you know, have to get an inspection. Well, they're going to love that, aren't they?
Right.
Pull up to the ramp and the guy goes on board to make sure your bypass valve is sealed off, and then you got to pay $10 for the privilege.
Yeah, well,
that's
it seems like they really ought to be doing that though, because it's one of the worst things that can happen to the lake, really.
No, it is, and it's getting plenty just from sewage, natural sources, you know, natural sources being septics and actual sewage discharges from other communities,
right,
in the lake's watershed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me see. I got a little bit of news here.
Well, let's hear some news.
Yeah. Well, it's an event. There's a event called the Stillwater Marsh Hike, which you have to sign up for. It's on September 26th, but you need to register before September 24th. Location is the North Fork check station on Kent Road, which we all probably know if you've ever gone up there to do some bird watching or whatever. And anyway, there's a hike through Stillwater Marsh, which will teach you how Lake Monroe manages the area with wildlife in mind. And they'll show what crops are planted for wildlife food, and show where some of the nesting boxes are, and just things about why and how it's flooded every year to create the wetland. And you know, it just explores everything, the trees, the plants, the animals that live there, or whatever. It sounds like a really pretty cool thing to do if you have the gumption. It is Sunday, September 26th, from 10 a.m. to basically noon, and you can sign up online. There's an Eventbrite, but you can find it, go to Facebook, and Friends of Lake Monroe have that pretty prominent on their site, and you can sign up right there if you want to go. There's also...
Okay, I got one for you.
All right.
I'll raise you one zombie hunt.
Oh, wow.
Is this one you were just going to talk
Downtown
about?
Downtown Bloomington?
No. This is Zombie Hunt begins September the 3rd at Potoka Lake. Get ready to scare up some fun, folks, mm-hmm. at Potoka Lake's second Zombie Hunt, which begins Friday, September the 3rd, and runs through October the 31st.
Wow.
purchase your exclusive zombie hunting license for $5 at the reservoir office, main gate, modern campground gate, camp store, or nature center. Then it's time to hunt for some zombies. A total of 12 zombies will be hidden around the property. Take a selfie with each to prove you were there. And once you get at least 10, head back to any of the locations previously mentioned. Show a staff member your photos and get stickers, as well as a souvenir cup or flashlight. Proceeds from this event benefit Patoka Lakes Raptor Program. That's big birds, yeah, like hawks and eagles. So top that.
Interesting. Well, that sounds kind of fun. Kind of like one of those GPS hike things, you know.
Oh, man. Well,
except they don't give you the coordinates.
What do you got? What else you got there, bud?
There's another birding paddle coming up in early, well, mid-September. It's September 19th at 5 p.m. Birding paddle, meaning that you can get into a kayak and then we'll take you around. And David Rupp of Indigo Birding Nature Tours will take you out there and show you what's happening. And if you want to see some raptors, it's probably the time to do it, because they're doing very well on Lake Monroe.
I want to know how this, before I go on this, I want to know how this birding paddle works. Is if you don't spot any bird, you get paddled, or you get to paddle somebody for every bird you spot?
I don't think that there's any paddling allowed in that realm.
Oh, I see. This is paddling a boat, I bet.
That brings some bad memories up of junior high school.
I'll have another, sir.
In Pennsylvania, we had every one of the teachers pretty much had a big paddle up on the wall, you know, that the shop
holes drilled in.
Shop teacher made, and with the holes drilled in them and everything, yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But never got hit by one, but, you know, it was just the sight of it was enough to keep you, somewhat on kilter, you know.
The holes were to make the paddle go through the air faster.
Right.
So it would make a real smack.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir. I don't believe they don't do that anymore.
No, I don't think that's too that's kind of frowned on nowadays.
It's not popular anymore. Well, anyway.
But anyway, yeah, the paddle is just to get around on the lake, but you may see some herons and some eagles and some hawks and good stuff. So anyway, take a look at that. That's also on Friends of Lake Monroe. They have a place where you can email questions or RSVP to the membership. I guess that must be something that they've kind of sponsored, but it just looks like that. But anyway, check that out as well. Lots of neat things to do in this time of year out at Lake Monroe, and including just, nice hikes. There's some really great places to that really are not that crowded, especially if you get out into the Dean Wilderness, and just beautiful time of year to be out in nature by Lake Monroe.
Well, today is certainly a beautiful day, this being recorded a couple of days ahead of it's a broadcast date, but just about perfect out there today. I have 81, but it doesn't feel like it out there right now. And it's a nice breeze, and boy, what a good day to be on the lake.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yep.
A good day to be any place on the water today. And we tried to picnic today, and didn't want to go too far. And of course, you know, my favorite city park is Cascades Park. You know, it's probably a lot of people's favorite park. And we went down there, and there's nothing going on there now, but closed and torn up.
Really?
Yes, it's just they're restoring a building. They've got that, as usual, road work going on up at the head of that where the drainage pond at the north end of town,
right,
washes out that wall that holds the all the water, the South Bloomington comes right through right there.
Right.
Comes through that drainage pond and right through that I don't know what it is now. It used to be a brick wall, you know, and then it had a big arch poured in it.
Yeah.
Whatever they put in there gets blown out the first big storm, you know. So they're in there working again, and I'd say it'll be open for a week or two until that next big gully washer, and it'll be closed again.
Yeah.
And I just hope they get the park to the point where you can use it again. There's picnic tables, old concrete picnic tables all over the place, but no benches with them.
Right.
You know, how do you use that? You sit on the table? You know, what's going on there? Let's come on, Parks and Rec. Let's get the Cascades shaped up. And we drove up to the upper Cascades, and there was it was like guys parked in cars all over the place. Listening to the radio or just sitting there. I don't know what that was all about, but it was kind of spooky.
Hmm.
And so we left there, and we decided, came home and ate our picnic on our deck. You know, here we are surrounded by parks, and this is Tree City, USA, remember?
Yep.
You remember that? Remember that once upon a time? And we couldn't find a place with a picnic table that was usable. No.
Well, it seems like they work on them at the worst parts of the year. You know, I can understand why you wouldn't want to do it when it's 100 degrees, but at the same time, at least get it done in the early spring or something, you know, so people can use it that year. But like you say, Cascades should not be all torn up right now. It's a bad time.
Well, it really is torn up, and it is a bad time. And, you know, we got IU coming in here for too long. With the 50,000 students. And man, Cascades Park is going to get some use, and it's going to be needed.
Yeah.
It's going to be needed. Big football weekends. I don't know how that's going to work out. We have the new hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Takes up a lot of traffic space for those football games. You know, we wonder how the ambulances are going to get through there, since it's just down the road about a half mile.
Right.
I don't know, you know. And they cut me off to 69 since they closed the road we used to get on 37 with.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes me another 20 minutes to get up to Indianapolis to the hospital now. So, you know, they got this new hospital over there by the football games. And that leaves Monroe Hospital, which I have found to be a good place.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, having used it a few times. And well, you know, that'll probably be on my list of hospitals to go to.
Mm-hmm.
From now on, just for traffic purposes.
Yeah,
you can't get right to it.
It has been difficult getting around the bypass. That I almost don't want to go that way anymore. It's so busy.
It's unbelievable. Where are all these people coming from?
I don't know.
You know, 46, you know, the new interstate they put in between Bloomington and 46. That thing's crowded all the time. There's more truck traffic on that than there is on the interstate. So I got them on both sides of me now. I'm getting dueling Jake breaks.
Yeah.
There's one right now. Yes, sir. I'd rather hear that any day than a Carolina chickadee or Carolina wren, wouldn't you?
Well, I've seen places around the country where they put signs up and say, do not use your Jake break here. Why can't they do that here?
I've seen them all over. Nobody even wants to talk about it here.
Yeah.
I've mentioned it to several quote-unquote influential people.
Yeah.
It's just, oh, what's that? Oh, well. Truck drivers aren't going to like that. You know, probably not. Oh, well. There we go.
Well, they have built a lot of those big giant fences that's supposed to keep some sound out, but those are all kind of down in town. They're not really up there where you are.
No, and they'd have to build a pretty high fence. You know, we're uphill from it. So you know, when you're uphill from a feature like that, you're not going to stop that sound.
Right.
We got trees, which help quite a bit this time of year, although it comes, you know, you can still hear them. But in the wintertime, when they're not there, it's pretty major. So it's a good thing I got triple pane windows.
Mm-hmm.
I can lock all that out. Just what I didn't want to do. That's why you move out in a country type area, is to get away from that.
Yeah.
You have that down where you are, I bet, to some extent, don't you?
You can hear it somewhat. Of course, 69 has taken some of the pressure off the South 37, so it's a little right. better, but it's still noisy.
Yeah. Did you ever get your streetlight business straightened out down there?
Nope.
Hmm.
No, it's just not much we can do about it.
No, I guess not. That's the way she goes, isn't it?
Yep.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Too bad. Let's see, I my buddy is on the city county, the county county commissioner, so I'm going to get a street light put in here.
Mm-hmm.
And there she goes. Oh, well. Well, you know there's this dark skies thing going on now, don't you?
Yeah, I used to belong to it.
Well, it's... Go ahead.
Dark sky... Is a pretty big organization. I mean, it's a worldwide one, so they have literally they've got certain places in the world that are protected from light pollution. But go ahead. What were you going to say about
it? Well, the movement has hit Yellowstone area, and there was a dark skies meeting in Cook City.
Good.
While I was there, our friend Mike is involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole object is to get people to conform to a certain size light and remember the direction that the light is pointed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can achieve a couple of things like that, the amount of light in the night sky will reduce over time.
Yeah.
And that would be a really good thing, because there's places where you can't see the stars at night, as you know.
Yeah.
So the whole object is that we'd like to be able to see those stars just as if we were all sitting on top of a mountain in Montana.
What's the worst offender up there? Is that obviously the cities, you know, like Cody or whatever, but.
Oh yeah. Right. Well, the big tourist spots in the park,
mm-hmm.
The park has not been signed on to the dark skies event, although I believe they're moving in that direction. There's been some lots of people putting pressure on them, and so the big places would be, of course, Old Faithful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's any place there's an inn.
Yeah.
Mammoth Lake, places like that, and the big city. Billings, of course, would be probably your number one, and Bozeman and Helena, Missoula, but those are all a drop in the bucket if you compare them to Indianapolis.
Oh, sure.
You know, just every city in the entire East Coast, when you look at those aerial maps, you know, the satellite maps,
mm-hmm.
it's just, it's amazing. You can see anything at night, really.
Yeah. Well, you can't in most cities.
It's right. It's kind of depressing.
That's one of the things I really enjoy doing when I go out west. And when we went to, gosh, it's been over a year now, but New Mexico and Colorado, it was unbelievable. One spot we were in was on a 14,000 foot mountain at night with nothing around. And you could actually see the shadows, you know, on the ground from the Milky Way. And the moon wasn't out that night. And
that's pretty good.
It's pretty amazing when you see it that bright. And we watched it all night long. We just put a couple of lawn chairs out on the dirt road we were on. Nobody was driving through that time of night. And we just sat there and watched the Milky Way go on and on for a few hours. It was amazing. Everybody ought to try to see that, because if you don't know what you're, if you've lived in the city, you don't know what you're even missing.
All right. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
I've got a friend who has a newfangled telescope. He bought one. It was about $4,500, and now he's got a better one where it tracks the Earth. You know, it goes by GPS and tracks, and then it does like the big telescopes do. It just tracks the star you're looking at, and you can get pictures of galaxies and things like that. And one of the reasons he lives in Florida, up on the Panhandle in Panama City, but he's got another house out in Taos and New Mexico just for that.
Oh, that's nice.
To go up there and look at the sky. And it's just a wonderful area, not right at Taos, but, you know, again, you run into this light problems with Albuquerque and Santa Fe and stuff. Even being 100 miles away, you can see the glow. But if you get up there into the high mountains, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's where you want to go if you want to see stars. We were out there during the meteor shower, at least the part of it. What is it, the Persephone's, or I can't think of the name of the meteor shower. But anyway, they're pretty visible.
Yeah.
Very visible, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Everything was precluded by the smoke from the fires. That was pretty bad out there this year. There was times you couldn't really see the end of the Lamar Valley when you were standing there looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Some days were worse than others. And some days your throat was scratchy and your eyes were always watering. My eyes are still watering.
Yeah.
And the big rains didn't seem to knock it down much.
Right.
It'd be nice the next morning, but by afternoon it was back to the same old thing.
Sure. Boy, and there's a lot of fires going on out there now.
Yeah, there are. They need some rain bad.
Yeah.
Need some rain. Well, I don't know.
Well, it sounds like you had a really good time, and
it was a good trip.
There was one point where you showed me some pics. I forget, it was on FaceTime or something, of the cabin you were in. So I finally got a little bit of a mental picture of where you guys were.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was when we were Zooming.
Yeah.
I carried my computer outside.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And showed you the view off of Mike's porch.
Yeah.
Which is mostly trees and mountains, which is, you know, pretty nice. Pretty nice. We're all getting old. We're the old guys now out there.
Yep.
And starting to realize our mortality and how much harder it is to get those cabins open and shut every year and maintain them. And, you know, there's lots of caulking. There's lots of wood rotting. There's lots of wood down to be cut up. There's lots of wood cut up to be split. And, you know, it just never ends.
So. Well, hey, with that, we've used up a whole hour again talking about the outdoors, and it's been really fun. I'm glad you're back. It's a little hard to connect up with you when you're that far away, but we'll do it again next week. So,
yes,
folks,
sir.
There you go. This has been Inside Outdoors, and it's Don Jordan and I. Wish you all the best. Get out there, enjoy Labor Day weekend, because that's this weekend. All right.
Yeah.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.